But then it gets to your question about sustainability, though. Like, despite how this city has sort of become like everyone against each other kind of thing, and just very, in a lot of ways, like survival right now, it's tough. The venues that I've had my events at, I've consistently had feedback saying that everyone loves my parties, the employees and the venues. And so it's a testament to resilience as a community is they find after our parties easiest to clean up after. Everyone wants to work our parties because everyone's so nice and respectful. And that's what's going to make this sustainable is the people coming together and this universal sort of
supporting each other.
Exactly. I am so humbled and grateful that this is what the reputation for Naraka events is now with venue spaces, because the community there, everyone's there, you know, everyone's so respectful.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steven Wakabayashi, and you're listening to Yellow Glitter, Mindfulness Through Eyes and Soul of Queer Asian Perspectives. This episode, we're joined by an extra special guest, Ty. In 2006, Ty first discovered the gay API community at the Web, a now defunct NYC nightclub, which left a lasting impression. After completing college, he settled into New York City in 2010, volunteering with local community groups, launched a small Friday party called Mao, was a design director at a new startup, and built community locally and internationally. He left in 2019 to become a freelance creative director, and his hunger for building community ultimately led to the creation of Narak in August of 2022. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steven.
Yeah, we were introduced by our mutual friend about maybe like a year ago, and since I've known you, we've talked about, or even longer than a year, I feel like.
Almost 2 years now.
Yes.
So I was just recovering from my leg injury.
Yeah. Wow. Time flies. And since then, we've talked about life, community work, New York City. I absolutely love and respect the work that you do and thought it'd be great to bring you on the podcast.
No, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And so you do a ton of work here in New York City in creating spaces for our API community, especially through your different parties here in the city. And I would say party is like a loose word to define it, really gatherings, but you also help companies, organizations do event activations. But let's just start with some of the stuff that you're doing in the city first. Like, what are you doing? What's taking up your time lately?
Yeah, a lot of it's been, as far as the event space is going, it's been a lot of like trying to set the established Friday, biweekly Friday parties, and also trying to branch out. I think the branching out this year is the big thing, trying to find more, less, I guess, nightlife focused events for people who are looking for, you know, more casual social gatherings, and then brunches, bringing in other queens for that, and K-pop.
Yeah.
You know, trying to reach that whole gamut of audience.
I love a good K-pop night.
Don't we all?
It's one of those things that myself personally, I used to be a K-pop fan like way back in the day. And I feel like now you have the new generations that make song, kind of, you know, a blend of different musical styles. My friend Nikita was listening to some songs by NewJeans. I was like, oh, there's a lot of like trap influence. I was like,
yeah.
And back in the day, it was like hop pop, you know?
Pure pop. Yeah. It's been quite the learning curve for me.
Especially when it comes to spaces you create. I think the first word that comes up is community. And I'm just curious, what does that word mean to you?
Yeah, I was, you know, as you know, in my intro, like I was very fortunate to meet a lot of people who were willing to take me in as a newbie to New York City, exploring being gay, exploring being Asian, and having that support group as I was going through, like, you know, college and experiencing New York. It meant a lot to me. There are some of my friends who have lasted forever. They're still my friends. And I want to be able to provide that space for the next generations, because there really isn't any space like that right now.
Yeah, especially in New York City, while we have a ton of spaces, especially in the queer space, oftentimes finding queer spaces at the intersectionality of queer API spaces mm-hmm. is quite a rarity. And oftentimes, you know, it becomes relegated to this like very fetish driven space. And I think a big part of your work has been to create a space that is not really meant as like this fetish driven like hookup space,
yeah.
but really a space to come celebrate our folks in our community.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to meet like a lot of people who across the world, and like it's the vibe. And I think it's, you know, party in Asia and experience sort of how the community is there.
Yeah.
I want to bring that back here because it's just very, you're Asian, but you're gay, and it's not like your identity. So it's more like bringing everyone in together, just really just to be themselves and just like experience community in that way.
Yeah. Well, let me ask, how did you even get started in this?
Yeah, so like back in the day, you know, we had the web, and then our friend Ouija, he started this party called Bond for a couple of years. That was sort of like a small bar that we were all going to. I started Mal on the Fridays. So just again, I was working like 12 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to hang out with my friends. So I was like, this is a great chance to bring everyone in, make a buck on the side too. Mm-hmm. And then I did that on Fridays for about a year. And then, you know, this year, like 2022, post-pandemic, I was like, well, I'm going to actively start looking for spaces. Mm-hmm. So I'd been keeping my eye open. And then Verse, which they were just opening in June of 2022, and had gotten in there, and they're like, they wanted to do something different in this Hell's Kitchen space. And so I'm like, yo, let's connect. I got the connections.
Yeah. And for listeners too, during the pandemic and especially throughout 2022, 2021, we had such a huge shift in businesses, especially queer bars, queer spaces in New York City. Most of the major bars did end up shutting down, right?
Yeah.
And I think If it weren't for many of the new owners to resurrect and or to start a new club or bar in place of them, I think some of them actually turned into like straight sports bars, right? In Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And I think one of them was Verse, and they took over another space and just started during that time. And what I think is quite fascinating, and maybe it's very serendipitous too, is that while you were getting into creating your own spaces and spots, it just happened to have great timing while all these different spaces were revitalizing too, right?
Yeah, I think it's all about timing. You know, we've talked about this before. The pandemic was a roller coaster. I am blessed that we had some spaces where we could have our own private parties. A lot of my friends started learning how to DJ then. So as I was looking for spaces, I had musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was part of those early days of success, was having several of our original four DJs who had already DJed for us all being able to just pop in right away and automatically made the night a thing. And I think that was a really important part.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to parties, let me ask, when you were thinking about collaborating and working with these different spaces, were you thinking of an API party to begin with, or it just so happened to end up there?
100%. It was always about creating a space for us, our community. And that was my selling point. I'm like, hey, we have a reach across the country. I think that was a challenge thing, proving to spaces that, you know, a lot of white and non-Asian spaces, they're like, oh, Asians are cheap. So, but being able to prove to them that like, nah, we're ready to throw down. If we have a space for our own and people of our own taking care of it, we're going to throw down.
Yeah. And, you know, wealth, I think, can look very different means. And I do think in many spaces, especially myself, and I've had some friends on and we talked about like old Steven, party Steven back in the day. And a big part of it was going to so many of these spaces that were frankly white dominant, white, gay, male dominant, and feeling as though I just never belonged, but in a way that I just always felt like I was trying so hard to just even to exist in these spaces. There had been times when I had been in a venue when, you know, I brushed up against somebody in passing through crowded spaces, or I might have like bumped into someone, or I might have, you know, even looked at somebody. There was once a time when I looked at somebody and one of the partygoers, gay white man, was just so disgusted by it. Ooh. That he made a whole stink about it. Yeah. He made a whole ordeal about it. And it was just that thing where it's like, you know, during like my party days too. Like that was wild, but it's still like very tame. It was just like getting so much disdain from other partygoers just been existing in space. And I couldn't help but to feel for so many years that I was like, what? Why am I spending money in this space? Why am I choosing to use the free time that we have such little of, right? Like we work so much of the day, but then, you know, we have this little free time. Like, why am I really investing so much time back into these spaces, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the pandemic and just my life and so many things took so many twists and turns. And it was really seeking these places out that finally I felt that I was in spaces that I felt heard, felt seen.
That goes back to like my first time in New York City in 2006. I, growing up in Virginia, was like, ew, Asian? Oh my God, no one wants me. All of those rednecks that were hitting me up on Craigslist.
We see you. You don't like us. I was like, and they're just like messaging you, like, hey, what's up?
As soon as you show your face, like, oh, you're Asian. Oh, no, gross. I'm like, okay, whatever.
But then they're like messaging you on the side on Craigslist, on Grindr. And I'm like,
There was no Grindr back then. But, no, when I came to 2006 in New York, I met a bunch of gay Asians that were more like me, and more like me in the sense that they were more, I guess, quote unquote, normal and more like, you know, more masculine presenting. And that's who I aligned with. And they took me in. They created a safe space for me. And yeah, I was Twinkie Tie back then. So whenever I was at a bar like the Roxy or Allegria back in the day, everyone was like, oh, Twinkie Tie. Well, they want a piece of that. So I was lucky I made a lot of connections through that. But so I had that community that I met in 2006 provided that safe space for me to be, I explore my identity as an Asian and as a queer male. And what you're saying now, I see that a lot in a lot of spaces, especially this gap right before the pandemic even hit. There was this kind of awkward moment for a couple of years where there was no specifically queer Asian space for us to hang out with. There was therapy, but that was by default. But there's no space intentionally for us. And that was something I saw that was missing. And then when we had the pandemic, everyone was making very strong connections, just hanging out with each other. And I was like, this is what I've been missing myself. And I see how much post-pandemic, I see how much everyone's craving that again. And so everything just sort of happened to align right at the right moment. And I think that's really one of the big driving forces is helping provide that space where people just really just be themselves and the most normal and not feel like they have to be over the top. If they want to, they can. All that. It's just everyone can be them.
But normal can be so different.
Exactly.
You can be, what are you saying, top? You could also be a bottom. You can also be side. Femme. You could be side. You can be none of the above. And I think the beautiful part about your spaces is, you know, for so long we had this, like, even like in the queer and gay and even gay Asian community, there's this notion of like, how do I have to fit in, right, into these spaces? And I think your spaces have been evolving to where just seeing the diversification of your spaces starting to really consider, like, what are some non-alcoholic options, you know? And how do we have spaces not entirely set up in just, like, the house music, top 40, diversifying to more K-pop? And I'm sure you're starting to see, like, a whole slew of audience changing as well, or who feel safe to come by, huh?
Yeah, it's exciting to see people come out to certain things that don't come out to the big, like the main party. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the whole point of creating these different spaces, like you're saying. It's they feel comfortable where they can fit in.
Yeah, feeling comfortable, wanting to just show up authentically. And I do think, just even reflecting in my life, and I do a lot of these deep reflections where I'm like, why did I even subject myself to these spaces for so long? And I think especially as queer people, right? Queer Asian people, we strive and long so hard to be a part of spaces, to feel like we have belonging. And there's also this interesting notion too, especially as Asian folks here in the West, right? In this country that is ours, but at times we don't feel like it is ours, but then we don't really identify with the motherland or countries where, you know, our heritage from is because we haven't been born there, right? Maybe we don't speak the country's language, or we just don't have the same customs. And a big part of us even navigating the spaces in a Western context has been trying to find spaces, trying to find ways that we can show up. And I would say, reflecting back on myself, I think for a long time, I had this notion of, well, I really want to be freely queer, freely gay. And I leaned so heavily into these spaces, not realizing it was very white dominant. And so much of me trying to show up in the space, I was like, well, if this is what it means to be gay, right, or it means to be queer, like, this is what I have to, I guess, be a part of, be integrated within. And the more and more I do this work, right, of either this podcast or all these other projects, the concept of intersectionality comes up, where we are at the intersection of all these facets of our personality, right? And I guess question for you is, what does that mean to you? What is intersectionality? Intersectionality of identities mean to you?
Yeah. Oh, that's a big one for me. I was, you know, as we talked about, I was born in Thailand and I was adopted when I was 2 years old. Bounce around the country every 2 to 4 years because my dad is, you know, FBI. And like, grew up in a very conservative Christian, very old, traditional family. And growing up in majority white areas and identity of being Asian, I knew I was Thai from being sort of self-awareness at two, but from there, like, it just, I didn't know what it meant to actually be Asian or Thai in that regard. So it's like explored. I went through that whole, like, that intermediate phase of like, oh, I'm so into anime. Yo, guys, look, you catch the latest,
I love anime.
same. But it was like the nerd style. It was like nerd level.
Otaku, yeah.
totally. It was like, oh man, you know, all the black clothes, you know, everything. I mean, now it's a different level. It's New York black clothes.
Well, now I'm all black.
But it's like, and then, you know, like I said, I met this crew in 2006, and like, this is different. I like this. I feel like I can start identifying with this and relating to it. And then, you know, it really changes once you get outside of the Western perspective. I think the intersectionality of international and American is a big one. Your perspective changes when you start hanging out with, like, partying, or even just hanging out with, like, a larger international community, and just sort of just puts perspective on sort of everything else around us. As you know, Americans, we value identity politics so much. And this idea of fitting into everything, you know, it can be an extreme in other countries, but I think we're taking it to other extremes where we try to pigeonhole each other. And I think that intersectionality of it all for me is just, I finally feel comfortable. I think that's the thing. Like, all these, growing up with all these different backgrounds and places and people, I finally feel comfortable. I feel like there's this, I've hit the sweet spot for myself.
Yeah. Well, I want to go a little further into what it's like growing up. You mentioned a little bit of it, but I'm just really curious, you know, especially as like an adoptee and learning about your Asian identity, your Thai identity, being queer, being gay, like, what was that like growing up?
growing up as younger years, it was fine. I was, you know, you say ignorance is bliss. Until the advent of the internet, I did not know what clearing a cache meant or clearing browser history. And, you know, when you have an image downloading for an hour of 75 kilobytes on, you know, the AOL dial-up, it you know, things happen and you get caught sometimes. And that's that created a lot of distance between my parents and I growing up from like high school all the way through college. And then, you know, they did the best they could with what they had. And I'm so grateful for them. I wouldn't be able sitting here talking to you if it wasn't for everything they've done for me.
Yeah.
But when I broke free, I think college was sort of like that iceberg, was sort of like that initial crack in the ice. Hanging out with the Christian Fellowship crew, I think that was like a nice bridge between sort of my past life and sort of hanging out with other Asians, breakdancing, like just that community. I think they really just opened up my doors a lot more to seeing the world in a different perspective, you know.
Breakdancing. You've never told me about this.
Yes, on the breakdance crew at James Madison University. Shout out to Circles.
Well, before we go more into some of these things, even, you know, navigating your queer gay identity, where are you with your family? Is it like a comfortable subject? Is it something that they've been able to reconcile? You've had discussions about?
Zero reconciliation on that. They know. It's something we don't talk about. So it's an interesting relationship. When I started all this stuff, my aunts know.
Yeah.
They're super proud of me. But when I talk to my parents, I'm like, oh, I'm doing community building and helping network people. So it's very vague and not specific. So it's still, and I mean, they're dealing with some health concerns. So it's something like I don't want to lay on to them extra. But it's just an interesting dynamic where they only get part of my life. It's very filtered.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we sometimes have to shut parts of our lives when people have blocks to be able to see from an open-hearted perspective. One, I'm actually really glad that you have aunts and other family members in this sphere who are proud, excited. I'm a proud sister. I'm proud of the work you're doing.
Thank you.
And it's just one of those things that, especially looking at the state of the country, right? And seeing a shift in so many demographics of people starting to think about repealing gay marriage, same-sex marriage, and bringing back so much of the discourse that I thought we had departed from, same-sex marriages were made legal and everyone's rejoicing ages ago, but it wasn't that long ago, right? But, you know, just around the corner. Hold on. I need to look at this up.
That was fairly recent.
2015.
Yeah.
9 years ago. Yes.
Yeah, it was fairly recent.
And so much of the discourse coming back. I do remember when I was coming up, and at the time, back in my hometown, Chick-fil-A used to be a very big thing. And when they first opened, it was this popular joint. Everyone was so popular. And I remember Prop 6 in California, proposition against gay marriage, same-sex marriages, came out. And it was just a very eye-opening moment for me to look at and start seeing, you know, people who blatantly had all this hate and all this anger.
Yeah.
And so much of what I'm seeing and experiencing now is very reminiscent of those times. People feel emboldened to, and what's crazy is I was just like, why are people spending so much money for impacting the lives of so many people around us, right? And it's just, but it goes back to maybe the experience with your family and just like religious beliefs or just conservative values that might be holding them back.
Yeah. It's like this idea that they are the guardians and stewards of the moral high grounds and it, no amount of money is too small to spend to be the vanguard of of this old ways.
Yeah. It's a part of a system, right? Like there's a huge system at play that
truly
weaponizes these tropes to garner, right, donation, sympathy, what have you. And I think a big part of life is, at least in a lot of the work that we do, is just starting to embrace the unknown, things that we're not aware of. Even discourse within the queer LGBTQ umbrella is expanding our awareness of, it's not maybe just these binaries of male, female, being non-binary, but a whole spectrum across the board, right? With different sexualities and having it as a, not even like you're either gay or you're straight, but how do we bring like different points at completely different angles, right? Where does asexuality sit, demisexuality? And I think what I'm learning more and more as I get older is that we truly don't know anything.
Nah. Again, American politics, they love identities. I mean, like we love putting a label on anything.
Yeah. And it's safety. It makes them feel safe, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. In this world right now, I think everyone's trying to cling on to what makes them feel safe, whatever it is.
I think there's something interesting that's said about multiple sides of the political spectrum. I think it can be said that I think we were spending so much time in discourse of just emboldened to battle one another. And I think what I'm noticing even like on YouTube, right? Of these different channels that have people from like these dualities, polarities, you know, having these YouTube videos made and arguing with each other. And I can't help but to see what's really happening, right? Like this stuff gets so popular. It's like so, right?
People aren't listening anymore.
Yeah.
Discourse isn't to actually have discourse and learn. Mm-hmm. Discourse is to be like, I'm right, you're wrong. And I think we can thank a certain former president for really codifying and making that part of American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's coming back to just listening and being open and like, discourse is good and when it's healthy, when we're able to learn and see, oh, maybe I am thinking about things differently or, you know, maybe I need to, you know, change my opinion, but being open to that. And I don't think we are open as a society anymore.
Yeah. You know, especially myself, you know, I attend protests. I'm all for, speaking truth to so many things. But I think sometimes what isn't really explained to so many of us is there's a very big gray area of like, it's not one or the other, and it's very circumstantial, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially with a lot of what I've been seeing lately is a ton of community infighting, you know, where especially within the LGBTQ umbrella, we're all fighting and arguing with one another. And there's even this like subset where it's like the LGB umbrella who wants to like distance themselves from the T and Q. And I'm like, what is happening? I'm like,
it's not the point.
There's
of it.
Just, you know. Exactly. There's not that point of it. And they're starting to align with more right leaning Republican ideologies. And it's just very sad to see so much is happening around us. That's how a lot of just really harmful discourse. And I think a big part of even like the podcast that we have, and we'll definitely talk about it later on, but this like vision for the future, or maybe let's talk about it now.
Yeah.
But a big part of how we even root ourselves in a conversation is thinking about what is the future that we want? Let me ask you.
Yeah.
What is the future that you want, Ty?
I mean, for myself personally, you know, I want a future where I'm able to build a space for everyone to feel safe, no matter what spectrum they're on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think to that sort of like infighting within the community, people have asked me, well, are you competing with so-and-so or this or that? I'm like, no, I'm not competing. My goal is not to compete. My goal is to provide an option and a space. And if you want to use it, use it. Thankfully, I appreciate it. At the end of the day, that's what my modus operandi is and how I see everything. I'm not trying to go after anybody. It's more like,
yeah,
I provide the space, and the community is the ones who fill that space with the energy they want it to be in. So I'm very fortunate that everyone's been able to use that sort of like idea of it being like a hollow vessel. I set the sort of the intention of it, and then the community fills it with their own energy. And I want to continue being able to expand that and be able to do that, tap into other communities that aren't feeling like they are being heard within the Queer API community space, expanding it outside of New York, being able to bring it to other cities. Because, you know, I talk to my friends in Philly or DC. There's a decent sized queer Asian community there, but there's no organization. There's no sort of, hey, this is where we can all be ourselves kind of thing. Less, you know, they have like sort of activist groups, less like a social space. So being able to bring that to other cities and stuff across the country and even the world, that's a long-term goal for NOC.
Yeah, I love that. I think what I really resonate with is, one, I love your projects, expanding outwards, diversifying, adding more texture into the landscape of different places to go out, things to do, spaces to be a part of. But what I really appreciate is what some will call like abundance mindset, but it's really this notion of wanting greater for one another.
Yeah.
And I think, call it abundance mindset or what have you, but we as individuals have to ground ourselves with that, that belief of wanting more for everyone collectively. And that in turn, I think, is going to impact the way that we see our work and maybe where it sits in lateral with other businesses.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're very familiar with, like, you know, working in the corporate sector and people like, we have to compete, we have to be number one and da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And the more that I'm doing work with our organizations and our work, the more I'm realizing, like, it's about sitting alongside all these amazing other people, doing work together, doing work that they're uplifting, that you're uplifting their work. And I think our work becomes so much richer in that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially as like a minority group within, traditionally marginalized minority group within within the queer space. Like, we all got to work together, because it doesn't behoove us to work against each other. And I've been blessed to meet so many of the drag queens. So like the Red Pavilion girls, they're so amazing. Kokoa,
Felicia. Yeah.
I've worked with them on several of my events. They're just like such good energy. And it's like,
yeah,
giving that back to each other, and helps each other's events grow. And it's sort of like, you know, I can't make one, I'll send people to that theirs, or they can't see it, vice versa. And so it's just, we just help each other out. And I think that's, as long as we can maintain that sort of mindset as we all get bigger, I think that's going to make sure we're unstoppable.
Yeah. And I think that's really the way forward of how do we coexist with one another. And
yeah,
so much of like my work now is undoing a lot of this like harmful corporate brainwashing that happened, where it's like how can any company have qualms or issues with wanting to support your competitor, right? Like, wouldn't you want to be in a space with other people who are co-creating with you, and that you can help have friendly competition or friendly support with each other, you know?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I think our products are better, our communities are better, our people are better. Mm-hmm. And yet what we're seeing also in like especially in the tech space, so many monopolizations of industries and organizations. And I think that's been really top of mind, is this concept of sustainability, right?
Yeah.
Not just the environment, but sustainability of our work, our community, ourselves, and how we maintain it. Because right now I feel like there's so many things happening where it's like, are we going to be around for 10 years, 20 years? And right in New York, you and I are here, and we like, This year in particular, when have we seen the weather shift back and forth? Literally one weekend is 20 degrees, right? And next weekend is 50 some degrees. And it's just, to me, just even being in the city, you're already noticing so many of these changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The changes are wild in the city. You know, I think seeing where everything's going, there was this nice little blip post-pandemic where New York felt like a community.
Yeah.
And now it's just everyone's for themselves. I think the economy's gotten so... It's very interesting, sort of probably... It's all hypothetical. But you saw how stock market crashed and how businesses crashed. Like, the large corporations totally crashed during the pandemic because people weren't out using their services that they had us addicted to. And as a society, we all became closer and we all became friendlier and sort of more accommodating of each other. And then I think going back to smaller local roots and more community-based things. And so now it's almost like they were cranked it up on us and we're like, all right, you guys are getting too chummy with each other. Y'all need to be in competition with each other. Y'all going to drive our sales up higher. So go battle royale it out or something.
Yeah, and during the pandemic, I remember when the pandemic first started, everyone's like, Zoom Friday hangout. Wow, it's amazing.
So great. So great. Yeah, drunk at 10 a.m. on Saturdays. It's amazing.
and it's, I really appreciate it. At least in New York City, you felt a big sense of camaraderie. And I think it was because we're piled on top of each other.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out how to survive. And I think we did actually a really great job socially distancing.
Yeah.
People stopped taking public transportation when they could, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when people are out and about, when it wasn't tourist heavy, right? People were actually spaced out, giving each other space. And it's just one of those things that it was a really good reminder that it wasn't about who owned what clothes, what, things you did that was just lavish, what food you ate that was so fancy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the real fancy restaurants, Park, was it Park 11 or other fancy restaurants?
Oh, Madison, yeah.
Yeah. They all did takeout,
And
all these restaurants went back to the roots and the basics of what does it truly mean to show up? And I think it really helped to bring it, humanize everyone with each other,
It's a common struggle to work against. And I think that that's what made it such a unique, hopefully a once in a lifetime experience. But then I guess to your question about sustainability though, despite how this city has sort of become everyone against each other kind of thing, and just very, in a lot of ways, survival right now, it's tough.
Yeah.
The venues that I've had my events at, I've consistently had feedback saying that everyone loves my parties, the employees in the venues. And so it's a testament to resilience as a community is they find our parties easiest to clean up after. Everyone wants to work our parties because everyone's so nice and respectful.
Yeah.
And, I think that's what's going to make this sustainable is the people coming together and this universal sort of
supporting each other.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I am so humbled and grateful that this is what the reputation for Naraka events is now with venue spaces, because the community there, everyone's there, everyone's so respectful.
For listeners to give so much more detail into Thai and just how far the extension of queer Asianness really extends, your performers, your musicians, the DJs, all of these folks are all typically queer API identifying, and you're creating this space, and even the bartenders, right? You put in these requests and you build this infrastructure. And I think that all plays into why the community, when they show up, feel safe, feel seen. Versus having, let's say, our identities commodified as a part of what comes up for me immediately is like all these companies celebrating Lunar New Year, you know, and putting all these like rev envelopes here, there, and going, oh my God, look at us. And I get like, like nothing to do with any Asian thing, right? Or sometimes they'll do these Lunar New Year celebration stuff. And, you know, Lunar New Year is practiced broadly across many different spaces and beyond also Asia. But like, I think there's something to be said about like showing up, creating space intentionally, bringing people, community together with a ton of intentionality, right?
Yeah.
And what I really appreciate about you is you almost don't give yourself an excuse of like why you shouldn't extend that into like different people or whatnot. Like you're really trying hard to make this a whole ecosystem for a community. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it comes from my experience as a brand development and advertising and marketing and experiential design and all that. I want everyone else to be seen and heard. I'm okay being in the background because that means I'm doing a good event. If there's not like a lot of complaints, things like that, you know, it's like if everyone's able to just have fun and let loose and just be themselves, I try the hardest in the background, making sure that like technicalities are out of the way, making sure the performers have everything they need, making sure any of the staff is taken care of, the venue's okay. And so that way it just creates the seamless and everyone just be there to have fun without having to worry about X, Y, and Z or whatever. That's really how I run the events. And then just building that seamlessness into the larger ecosystem of like NotOc and future events is going to be, that's how it's all going to be.
Yeah. And also, I think what's top of mind, going back to what you mentioned around the space being clean, the immediate analogy I have is, so I used to go to Burning Man like way back in the day for so many years. And there's this whole notion of Burning Man around like you clean up after yourself, you make it sustainable. And over the years, you've just seen this influx of just garbage and trash and people dumping everything. And while on the outside, it might be just as simple as like clean up after yourselves, but in practice and in theory, it extends it so much further, right? People keep clean and people take care of the spaces that they love, they resonate with, and they feel nurtured by, right? Versus they come in and you have to use it, you know, up and make the most of it and get the fuck out, right? And I think there's something to be said about using that also as a gauge of, am I creating some space that people feel as though it is almost like their home, right? That they feel enticed to clean and care for as well.
That's exactly it. And I think it's like, when I was starting all this, all these out, I was like, I want to feel like I'm inviting people into my space or like my home or something. Just that's the attitude and friendliness and sort of welcomeness that, you know, I approached it in the early days. And to your point, you're right. Like people come in, they're so grateful to have this space. So, and they treat it well. And I think,
I'm laughing because I was like, next up, all NotOc events, take off your shoes when you go.
Imagine at the rooftop of the hotel, there's just like shoes lined up in the lobby of the hotel.
It's a home. it's great. And I also think you really strive hard to think also about the organization, growing it, thinking about in terms of like the operations side and really creating a sustainable environment. And I think out of so many things that I've been a part of, I do appreciate so much intentionality that you put into the space. And
thank you.
I think it's a part of why New York is the way it is. It's, we have so many people that just care about nurturing the city and our people. And it's especially having gone to your stuff, I love it. I think folks should attend. Ty is hosting events in New York primarily, but also hosts some in like Singapore, Thailand.
Sisters,
all the sister cities. And let me ask you, after having run all this and having done all of it, and it's a part of just your day to day, how has this changed you personally, impacted you personally?
Yeah, I think one of our early conversations, we were at that dim sum place, and you mentioned the people who I'll meet. Mm-hmm. I think that has been one of the biggest changes, the people I've been meeting. Like, I'm now really close with the CEO of this premium soju company. Mm-hmm. People are building things. You start attracting other people that are building things. And those conversations just start becoming about growth and helping each other. Like what we originally said, like helping each other, like, oh, I know so-and-so. Those kind of things to help grow each other and support each other. I think that's been the coolest change that I've seen so far. And it's just like this other energy. I think I have new energy for life in a lot of ways. I think knowing that I'm building something of my own in my own dream that I am truly, truly passionate about, it gets me up out of bed. You know, I think sometimes it's hard. Yes. But at the end of the day, I'm so, especially now with the bed right here, I am so grateful. And that, and living up to the community's expectations, I think that I put that on myself a lot too, you know, making sure that they enjoy the best event possible and make sure that they're building their own communities, you know?
Yeah, it's, and what people I don't think sometimes like on the attendee side are aware is like, it's tough to do this stuff, right? Because it's easy to be like, oh, I'm just going to make a new space. It's for anyone and everyone. And we're going to just make a ton of money, right?
Yeah.
Which is like most of the parties and most of the venues, right? Mm-hmm. In the circus space, like I know it's hard to believe, but the circus space, like way back in the day, decades and decades and decades ago, was this underground enclave of queer people, more diverse, right? Of all different backgrounds, different body shapes and sizes. And I think when it started turning into who's who, it started like self-selecting for these spaces. And once you really get into it, you realize like a lot of the people who are like, you know, the quintessential type of beauty, right? Light skin, white, masculine, muscular. Mm-hmm. They don't even pay to go to these parties. And so it's like, it's not even like who's who. It's like who got free entry into it and then they self-select.
Yeah.
But going back to the point is even getting funding to run for this is hard, right? Finding a venue that is really excited by this is hard. And a lot of spaces will be like, oh, we want to, you know, champion diversity and equity and all these people. But the minute you're like, okay, but I want this space and let's do this and will you pay for it? They're like,
yeah,
we'll get back to you, you know? And so like, I want listeners to really understand that this stuff is hard, you know, and really securing spaces, especially in New York City, when businesses feel as though if it's not catering to everyone, i.e. like mostly primarily still like white community here in larger America, that they somehow might be losing money.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. That is a big thing that a lot of venues have mentioned, especially for the weekends. They have a high bar minimum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think with that, they're not as open to experimentation. I get it. They're a business. They have to worry about their bottom lines. And I think part of why I've been able to be so successful is I've been able to find, build relationships with venues and people that are willing to let us experiment. Mm-hmm. Like last summer, I was at High Bar. I introduced the owner there and I had a Sunday party every Sunday. It did great first couple months and then just kind of petered out, which as everyone gets busy.
But it was the winter time, but it was like.
It was fall. It was still warm. But they were still willing to let me have it. And I think that's a testament to the relationship.
Is
they were letting me like, oh, cool. Yeah. They were still letting me like, cool. We know we trust you. We know how much you can bring in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's slow. We get it. Everybody's slow. Da, da, da. They're willing to work with me.
Yeah.
Other venues, like, you know, they're very much so, you didn't hit the minimum. So can we do it a different space or different room? And then you get bummed because that part of that's a larger space that's more public.
Yeah.
It's louder. So, you know, I think I am very, very fortunate to have established the relationships I've had to be able to have space to experiment.
Yeah. Well, you know, the spaces that you've had, like like people show up, people are spending money, being a part of the festivities.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it is really short-sighted of people to equate, like, unless your community is making me cash, like, you mean nothing. But the other part is, like, we live in a world where you've got to figure out how you're making these spaces. And especially as a person who is actively thinking about these things, developing businesses, projects, I think if we don't do that, like, the alternative, right, is if we don't do this, homogeneity, like, what great is that? Is that inspiring us, right? Is that getting us out of our bed in the morning? Is that making New York City, New York City, especially in that case, right? And is that the legacy? Let's say we're not even here anymore. Is that the legacy that we want to leave behind, you know?
Yeah.
And I read a lot of books about a New York City culture from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And how often is a space revered for sticking to the norm, right?
Yeah.
Like that venue that...
It's always the weird, wild ones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The ones that really push the boundaries, the one that was more inclusive towards, you know, folks coming in who were at one point, it was like, they're like, oh, this is wild. It's not this, like, you know, Thai establishment. It's like musicians and artists and, you know, which I feel like is like everyone's audience that you're trying to cater in Brooklyn now. But I feel like these venues that were creating space for so many people who at one point, right, even like all the different nightclubs from like Studio 54 era, right? Like all of those places were catering towards a lot of these people, right? Who were in the fashion scene, were in the nightlife scene, who were more avant-garde in personality at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But those are now revered, right? And people are like, oh my God, like, look how amazing that was. But it's so funny how it's like, People try, don't realize that they're like really upholding like homogeneity and just like one bland, like, you know, like empty inclusivity, right? Inclusivity is saying everything for everyone, right? All lives matter, right? It's it's like all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And not realizing that really what moves the needle is when we constantly keep looking for spaces and communities that really haven't been served, right? And then we're actively creating space for them.
It's such a catch-22, I think. It's like we start off with creating those unique spaces that are breaking out of the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, or as they say, get bigger, it becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how do, I think the challenge for me and Nanak is like, how do we make sure that it's evolving in a way that is still feeling fresh, but also in a way that it's intentional. And I think that's a challenge, you know, I think for as I grow and sort of move forward, I think that's also why I'm spreading out into different things, like social specific sort of events,
mm-hmm.
you know, different genre events specifically, is how do we keep it fresh? How do we make it feel intentional and wanting not just the homogeny, like, you know, we see a lot of the community sees each other. There are a lot of them are friends with each other.
Yeah.
So everyone sees each other during the week already. So like, why do we still want to come out?
Yeah.
And I think that's the new interesting side is, and thankfully we're in New York, is there's always someone new coming into the city. There's always visitors. There's always someone from out of the country. So it's that, I think, continues to help inject new blood every time an event's going on. Just, it's nice to see new faces. I think that's the homogeneity side of things, is you get used to seeing everyone's face and you're like, oh, I've seen them like last week.
Mm-hmm.
But with New York being New York, I think that's, I am blessed and very lucky in that regard to have that high sort of like turnover.
Yeah. And I really resonate with what you mentioned. Like once it could be like this radical space and like a radical space. When we think about the who's in the margins for our spaces, I think we always have to constantly reflect on that. And I think what's resonating with me is queer spaces in New York, right? Mm-hmm. There was a time when literally queer spaces were like the underground and were demonized. Police were coming in, arresting people in these spaces, were being in a same-sex relationship was illegal. And at one point in the U.S., now we're seeing queer spaces, frankly, a ton of them, which is amazing, right? But even like yourself, like having to pitch this concept of, well, queer Asian space is important, right? And then being turned away. And what makes me think about two things, like one, it is like the need to constantly reflect, even when we're in the, it's like the populations with power, resources in these communities, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically in the queer communities with especially the white dominant spaces, right? Learning to make space for the margins within the LGBTQ space. But I do reflect on the flip side, could be also in our queer Asian spaces, right? Like, do we stay more relevant in terms of being open-minded, welcoming, accepting who are our margins, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a few things that's coming up that I see you immediately implementing is this notion where it doesn't have to be based around hookup culture. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be based around alcohol, drugs.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be around the need for dating, right? Mm-hmm. And diversifying these spaces and creating spaces that have different intentionality and also even like music genre.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the sort of, New York is such a diverse space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say a lot of the established queer Asian community has found their lifelong friends and their sort of groups in the city. And part of what I hope and am seeing happen is people are moving outside of their groups. They're meeting other people at not Oxbate events.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, where leaning towards more the social side is like getting people out of that and like, hey, cool, let's go like, I don't know, make pottery or stamp paper or something. But just like something where they can meet other people
love that.
Fellow queer Asian community. Others. Yeah, I know. It's like what? There's also like this whole entire older group of the queer Asian community that isn't like loud music. They don't want to be out and sort of like all that space. So like, how do you tap into them and make them feel like, because they want to also build fellowship within the community. So from the conversations I've had with other people, you know, it's like, does that look like a yacht party where we for one Sunday for like 2-3 hours, you pay X amount of money, we get some champagne and it's an older group of queer Asians. And so it's just like, you know, it's what do these spaces look like to cater to all these different groups within our space?
Wait, business idea for you. I feel like this can easily turn into like Nadox Social. And it's like, okay, there's this new venue in New York City. And I think it was like one in LA, but you just make phone cases. And then they have all these charms and all these things in the Excel.
Love that.
Clear phone cases that you can put as many charms as you want. And then they give you like this thing that almost like frost, like cake frosting, and it dries and it hardens. And then you could basically make your own phone cases. I could just see like,
I love that.
Like that activity stamp, like the little wax stamps, like that's popular. Paint night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things. And I think I think it's intimidating. New York is intimidating. And I think I am very fortunate that people trust me and the Nanoc brand and know that I've vetted whatever experience you're about to walk into. I've vetted it thoroughly and you're going to have a good time and it's with intention. So I think that puts people's minds at ease. So whenever I'm like, oh, there is something new, we're going to do rubber stamp making. They're like, cool. I know it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Okay, a few questions for you. I think we touched on so many things. I absolutely adore you, the work that you do. A few quick questions. What is one thing that is resonating from you from this conversation that you want listeners to be taking away with?
For listeners, be open-minded and think listening to each other and different opinions, truly listening. I think that's the only way we're going to move forward.
Mm-hmm. And what is inspiring you lately?
everything. I honestly, it's just like there's so, I'm working on a client for a synthetic bio client, doing an event in April for them. I'm inspired. They genetically engineered plants to glow. So it's like, I'm inspired by a lot of stuff right now. It's just like, and it's trying to contain it. I think that's trying to contain it. That's the big thing.
Favorite K-pop song?
Oh, it's one of the Chungha songs. Bicycle? Stay by Chungha.
Okay. Yes.
Stay.
That's so funny because I haven't been listening to as much K-pop in the past like few weeks, but I listen to so many and I was like texting him to you. I'm like, Ty, listen to this.
I know. I'm sending it to, adding it to my list for my DJs.
But the Thai pop girlies, their stuff is so good lately. I'm like, oh my God. It's catchy, huh?
Yeah. Sometimes I play some of the groups and they're like, oh, who is this? I'm like, it's Thai.
Yeah. It's so good. So if anyone's listening and wants to check out some new things, there's a bunch of, it's just a Thai pop. I usually use YouTube. Ali is a really good one. And there's a few others, but really, really, really good stuff. MX Fruit is my favorite. They're like the new jeans, but Thai. But they're so cute.
it's very cute. It's very distinctly Thai as well.
Yeah. And I think just in terms of even the curating of the members, I feel like the people that they have represent so many facets of Thai populations really well too.
Yeah.
And even like the skin colors and the diversity of like faces, I think they did a really good job. Yeah.
Definitely.
How can people find you and your work?
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram, NarakNYC. Also, if you're looking for tickets and more party event information, naraknyc.com. That's where we're at.
If you're going to expand beyond NYC, are you going to get a different handle?
So I'm going to register as S-Corp as Narak. And so that way I can expand and obviously want to set up a specific handle for each location.
Narak or Narak.
I gotta start booking accounts now.
Yes, you do. All right. So TBD, more to come. And if you as listeners took a lot out of this conversation, definitely leave us a rating or review in your favorite podcast platforms. That's how folks will discover us through your kind words. And also if you visit our website at yellowglitterpodcast.com. You can learn more about Ty, and we'll add links to his website, his social, and other projects in there as well. Thank you so much for this episode, Ty. I love the work that you do. I'm a huge fan of just you as a person and all the work that you're bringing out into the world. I just really appreciate the conversations we always have.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you. It's been a blessing meeting you. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity to share a little of my story with everyone.
Awesome. And for all those listening, thank you for listening. And we're excited to host you on our next episode. Thank you, Ty. And we'll talk to you later. Bye now.